Welcome to The Dispatch from Newberry Consulting Services, where we believe in building community through better management, better teams, and better business. I'm your host, Trevor Newberry, and I hope you enjoy the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dispatch. I'm a big fan of goals. Sure, they get a bad rap, but I think that's mostly because people tend to treat them as a panacea. In reality, goals are like a compass. They help point you, and more importantly, your efforts, in the right direction. Sticking with that metaphor, the path toward a goal can be winding with lots of forks in the road and branching trails. Having a goal can help keep your eyes on the destination and arrive there successfully. For me, one of the big goals I had early on in my career working for myself was to achieve $10,000 in monthly recurring revenue. Why $10,000? Well, frankly, it was arbitrary. But still, it had some practical benefits. $10,000 represented a milestone for me that reinforced the health and legitimacy of my business and helped me to realize that I could build and grow a business from nothing to something. Practically speaking, the $10,000 number also meant that I could do things like pay myself better, invest in services and products to help continue to grow my business, and have more flexibility when it came to who I worked with. Recently, I sat down with Max Pollock for the second time on The Dispatch to talk about this goal, how he hit it himself, and how it helps to have concrete goals to aim at when growing your business. I hope you all enjoy my conversation with Max Pollock. Max, thanks so much for being back on the podcast. Welcome back. It's been a little while. I think a lot has changed in your personal and working life, and I'm excited to catch up with you and talk about growing your business to 10K. So, yeah, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I think it's been just about a year since we last recorded, and a lot has changed, you know, personal life, work life, and just the happening of a global pandemic and all. So it's been quite an eventful time.
It has been a wild, wild time. So catch us up. When we talked last, I believe you were with Fledging. You were still living in Birmingham, Alabama. Neither of those things are true anymore. So catch us up on what's going on in your life.
Yeah, I think from the geographic point of things, I was still in Birmingham. I think we interviewed and did that podcast right before I moved. And I moved from Birmingham to Chicago, and then from Chicago to Philly. And I did the move from Chicago to Philly in March of 2020. And moving across states during a global pandemic is hectic, but one of the silver linings is there's no traffic whatsoever. So I made it from Chicago to Philadelphia in record time. So that's kind of how things have looked for me on that side of things. In regards to the work situation, I was doing Abstract Collective studio since say, April 2020, freelance nights and weekends, and I shifted to doing that full-time officially on December 10th of 2019. So I've been at it for a little bit over a year now full-time, and what Abstract Collective is, just to kind of recap, is a studio focused on marketing, design, strategy services for startups and organizations. We're industry agnostic and really focusing on those smaller startups, typically a headcount between 1 and 50 on their team.
Awesome. That is a great recap. You know, and moving around and doing all of that work in the middle of a global pandemic, I'm sure was interesting. But I'm glad that you guys are that you're off to the races, and I am particularly excited about this conversation because you've done really, really well with Abstract Collective, and I think that this is a subject that a lot of people will get a lot of value from hearing, because this 10K mark for growing your business, for lack of a better way to put it, it's sort of a benchmark for a lot of businesses, for a lot of people to start businesses, especially when they're working on their own or only working with a couple people. Hitting 10K a month is a great measuring stick of success. It's a great way to identify for yourself and for your business, like, hey, I'm onto something. So I am very excited to talk to you about that. So let's talk about this 10K milestone. You've managed to hit this in the middle of a recession and a global pandemic, which I think is commendable. So how did you do it?
Yeah, so that was originally a goal for December 2020, and we hit that halfway through the year. I think similar to all founders, when COVID was being taken more seriously in the US around March, there was this big question of how is this going to impact us? How are we going to have to pivot? Are we going to be able to stay alive? And for the month of March and April, I really was holding my breath while also working as hard as I could. And to my surprise, we actually continued growing at the rate that I was hoping. And then that only continued to expedite over time. So looking back, obviously hindsight's 2020, but a lot of the work we do is in and around digital marketing. And when places are closed, when you can't actually go to retail, the importance of having a digital presence and marketing on those digital channels is crucial. So we saw a huge influx of clients who might have been either on the fence or came to us through referrals that were really looking to increase their digital presence and the marketing that they do on those channels. And that helped us grow very rapidly in that sector because that's what is really in demand right now with COVID and everything else.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, one of the things that you mentioned there is bringing a lot of value with your services. This is obviously something that is kind of a no-brainer, right? Like, duh, if you're not bringing a lot of value, why are you doing what you're doing? But I think it's a really important thing to drill down on because a lot of people that go into these advisory services, those services are not tied to either deliverables or outcomes, which puts you in a position of charging a lot of money for self-talk, you know, or, you know, helping somebody think better about things, which is not an invaluable thing. But I wanted to hear your thoughts on how delivering these mission critical services are really impacting your ability to grow, not just the quality of the work, but your ability to grow.
So that goes into a big principle if you're in any type of service firm where you need to be bringing value and what I like to call doing good, doing damn good work. And it's one of those things that if you can't quantify, showcase the value and the results that you're getting for the client, they have no real reason to keep you around. So that's something that it's always important, but I think it's even more important now with people having less budgets, less spend, and less patience for people who can't get the results that they're looking for, can't achieve success that the business needs and everything else. So that's only become more and more crucial the past few months.
Yep, I agree with that entirely. One of the things that I believe is really hard about that to, as you know, to use industry lingo, niche down to get a little bit more clear about the types of services and even the types of customers that you're servicing, because it's very difficult to be really good at a bunch of stuff. It's really, or comparatively, easier to get really good at delivering a specific type of service or servicing a specific market. That to me is part of the secret of doing damn good work. What are your thoughts on that, on getting specific about either the work or the client or all of the above?
Yeah, I think when you position yourself as an expert, the more focused, the more niche you can become. You become a razor blade for a specific industry or for a specific problem. After you've worked with one firm, say in your case, software, you're not going to have as much expertise as after you worked with 10, after you worked with 100 and everything else. So being able to niche affords you scalability in the sense that you know what patterns to expect, what problems that you're probably going to incur, and what is the truly mission critical work that will move the needle for a specific industry, a specific firm trying to solve a specific problem. So the more that you can figure out where your studio fits in the realm of those things, and the more that you can focus and niche down, the better. Because if you try to be everything for everyone, you're going to be nothing for nobody. And that's a counterintuitive thing. And even I work with that as a studio founder, right? Trying to play within where I know I could bring outsized value and balance that, because sometimes we stretch ourselves, you know, too thin. And that can lead to a good learning opportunity, that could learn to a good insight, or that could lead to a not so great client outcome. So it's kind of a balance of being uncomfortable, but also deepening your expertise in a very specific niche so that you know exactly who your customer is, what problems they run into, and how to solve those for them.
Yep. 100%. I think a good example of that, and I want to use my own company as an example of that. Last year, I was working at about a $12,000 MRR, end of the summer, going into early fall, and I was just slammed. I was doing so much work. I was working 60 hours a week. It was at times a little miserable. It was also really, really frustrating. I was working with a food and beverage client. I was working with a real estate client. I was working with a software client. I was working with a retail client. And there were several different smaller clients. I consider clients, like I was doing coaching. I was working a little bit with the accelerator that, you know, you had worked with in Birmingham. And it was, I was way too fractured and way too busy, and nobody was getting the expertise and attention that they really deserved as my clients, and especially for the rates that I was charging. And that actually, while I was super happy to have that kind of recurring revenue, it kind of bit me down the line. It became a problem for me. And so we scaled back. We scaled back really, really dramatically towards the end of last year because we decided, you know, it only makes sense for us to keep doing this if we are able to focus and bring a lot of value. We can't keep doing work in a bunch of different areas, a bunch of different kinds of work for a bunch of different kinds of clients, and do that well and maintain the reputation that we need to actually have a sustainable MRR of that level.
There's a theme of intentionality, right? And how do you want to grow your business? And if you're chasing just that $10,000 MRR, you might take on out-of-scope projects. You might take on bad clients just to chase that number. And one of the things I wanted to be very intentional about with Abstract Collective was I wanted to make sure that we were growing sustainably, we were growing in a healthy way, and that also we were process building everything along the way. So I didn't want to hit $10,000 and then the next month have it be four and have it kind of seesaw up and down. And a couple of the processes that we put in place and the things that we learned along the way was figure out how to identify a bad client. And once you do so, offboard them at the next exit point. And typically what I do for a new client is I'll do a 30-day engagement, typically nothing longer. And that gives me enough time to figure out, can I bring them value? How is it like to work with them? And is this a client that I want to keep on long-term or longer term, I should say? And if the answer is no, I'm only tied to them for 30 days and then I could wish them the best and say bye. So being able to build that flexibility on both sides for both parties to be able to say, this isn't working out. Let's move forward separately. The other thing I do is a lot of studios fall into this delicate dance of doing business development, AKA generating new leads, new clients, and then actually doing the work for their existing client load. And it's one of those things that some people get into the trap of doing one and then not the other. And then you kind of seesaw back and forth. And what I was very intentional about since day one was making sure that I'm doing business development every week. And what that looks like is making sure that I reach out, and that's typically cold outreach. But I've done a lot more warm outreach or referrals, especially as we've grown and pleased a lot of our clients. And I typically do that, you know, maybe an hour tops every Tuesday, where I'm just checking in, trying to move things forward, trying to get calls scheduled. And the other thing too is I'm always trying to bring value as well, and not just say, hey, you know, how are things? I want to be able to say, hey, I think you might find this resource helpful, or you mentioned this in our last conversation. I talked with so-and-so and this kind of answers your question. You know, always being value-driven on every step of the way is very helpful, and building that into a sustainable, repeatable process where instead of me seesawing between business development and client work, I'm having a healthy balance within my typical work week. And then the other point, which we've talked a little bit about this, so I'll keep this brief, is identifying differentiated services that you can repeat, that you have outsized value that you bring to the table, and double down on those, because you will be very happy. Your clients will be very happy. And as you build expertise, your rates will go up and you will continue to be very happy.
Yeah. You took the words out of my mouth. The next thing I was actually going to ask you about was business development, because there's two sides of this equation as far, pardon me, as far as I can tell, is doing really good work, raising your rates, building your reputation, but then also having a system for going out and getting new clients, right? And that can be a number of different things. You and I both have had interactions with a guy named Mo Bunnell, who has been super, super helpful for me in terms of just getting my head around what is business development, how can I create a repeatable, sustainable system for that. For me, and it sounds like for you, a lot of the business development effort that I go through is actually referral, right? So it's difficult for me because I work with, as some of the listeners will know, I work with non-technical software founders. So people that don't know how to code, people that have never done it before, but they have an idea and building software is the right solution for the idea. So how do you get in front of those people? They probably don't have a website. They don't have... they may not have even incorporated at this point. There may not even be a record on file of their incorporation, right? So my best strategy for finding clients is to find strategic partners that I can do good work for and generate referrals from. So that's great to hear. What was your experience with cold outreach? I want to hear a little bit more about that.
The whole idea of cold outreach is you do it so you can stop it sometime. You don't want to continue. It's not a sustainable process by any means. But I am lucky that I didn't have to do it that much. Very similar to what you just said, I focused on building referrals through going back to that principle of doing damn good work for clients. Because if the client was happy and at that point of peak happiness, I could either ask for a testimonial or I could ask for a referral. That helps me grow a lot. And then the other side is I found partners, a lot of which who I knew either between the accelerated work I did down in the South or previous roles I had at startups, where this could be an investment firm, this could be a law firm, a fractional CFO firm, a sales consultant, et cetera, et cetera. And basically, I found these partners who work with the same target customer, but their services don't compete with mine. So it's one of those things where I can refer business their way. If I have a client that needs to, say, get a patent or trademark, I have a lawyer that I refer them to. And then if they have somebody who needs help on the marketing, design, or strategy side, they refer to me. So hitting it from both of those angles has helped a lot. But to kind of stress the importance of referrals, over 75% of my clients have come through referrals. And I could trace it all back to, I had one client, you know, a year ago who referred me to somebody, they referred me to someone who referred me to someone, and so on and so forth. So again, it's depending on where you start out. Obviously, I was able to leverage my network to bypass a lot of the cold outreach. But if you keep the fundamental of doing damn good work as top focus, regardless if you start with one client, 10 clients, or whatever that is, it'll work out for you because you will deliver outsized value. They will be very happy and they will say, I know another person who's running a business, or I know another person who's having this problem. Can I connect you with them? And that's more business, which is obviously key for running a studio and growing it over time.
And I would say that that's probably a more, maybe even more important in our current economic environment, because referrals carry with them credibility, right? And people feel a little bit more, not a little bit more, a lot more constrained in terms of their budgets and what they can spend on services. So having someone that can make a referral doesn't just give you the lead. It also says, hey, I believe in the work that this person is doing. I can show you how they have done excellent work for me. So it gets you your foot in the door plus, right? It gives you a little bit more leverage even out of the gate. So just to kind of recap here, because I'm trying to draw a bit of a roadmap here for listeners, is we've got do really good work. And part of doing really good work is also understanding where you provide the most value, drilling down on that, getting really, really good, niching appropriately, being the operative word there, getting down to either the market or the specific services, or preferably all of the above, where you can provide really, really solid work and value. And then have a business development habit. That business development for certain companies may look like cold outreach. It may look like marketing and advertising. It may also, in the case of you and I both, it may be more in the realm of referrals and strategic partnerships. But have that strategy there and invest in that strategy on a regular recurring basis. Does that sound like we're all on the same page here?
Yeah, I think that's a great summary of the discussion points so far.
And so the last thing I wanted to talk about in terms of this is rates. Charging what you're worth. So here's another problem that I ran into. I keep using myself as like the negative example because I remember that time so acutely as being simultaneously really exciting for myself, but also really painful for myself. I wasn't charging enough money. And that meant that I had to have more clients to hit those that revenue number. I had to have so many clients to hit that revenue number that it was unsustainable for me to do the work. I want to talk to you a little bit about how you have raised your rates and your sort of philosophy around setting rates, raising rates when it's appropriate, and how to identify whether or not your rates are actually commensurate with the work that you're doing.
Before I hop into that, I just want to give a comment. I think we've all been there with figuring out, typically the hard way, how to price ourselves. The smallest project that I did was $250 to build a website. So yes, and it was a lot of work. Obviously not nearly the pay that's consumerate with the amount of work that goes into building a website. Typically that's more of a 5, 10 plus K range project, depending on functionality, design, back and forth and all that. So everyone's been there where, whether it's you're trying to build up a portfolio, some testimonials, a case study, or you're balancing the insecurity of, can I bring value and does my work have this value and stuff like that. So we've all been there. And I think the important thing is you start somewhere and then you adjust as needed. And going into your question on the adjustment piece of things, one of the pieces of feedback or piece of advice that I have is, if you're not nervous about the rate that you're asking for, you're probably not pricing yourself fairly. So if you're not nervous about getting a no, your rates probably should be higher. Granted, the rates should always be based in some kind of value equation. And typically what I'll do is I'll ask clients questions like, what does success look like? How will it be measured? And that helps me figure out how the client sees value creation and then make sure I pitch the project in that way. And if you know that you're going to bring Y value, obviously a percentage of that, you want to be charging as your fee. And depending on how involved or how white glove or how hands-on or hands-off it is, you adjust accordingly. The other thing, going back to the idea of working with the same niche firms on the same niche problems, as you build expertise and you build a portfolio, your rates should be going up because you are better at serving that niche problem now than you were a year ago. And your rates should justify that. And you should reward people for, you know, taking a little bit more of a risk because you're not as experienced, you're still building up a portfolio or your case studies. And as you build that credibility and those results, you should be charging more. The other thing is, you know, quantifying as much as possible. So an example that I have is I worked with a firm through a significant part of 2019, launching them on Amazon. And if I were to take the amount I was paid for that engagement and compared to the amount of value that I generated, it was roughly $50,000 I was paid, or what the fee would be, for over $1 million in additional revenue. And if you think about that, that's a 20x ROI. That's also a damn good case study so that whenever I have, you know, a warm lead or I'm doing a discovery call and someone says, in this case, I want to launch on Amazon, how do I know you're the right guy? I have that case study and now I have other case studies from clients that I could pull from and say, you're comparable to this product in this area, and I can get you a similar results because I have a playbook and I have processes to be able to launch and scale your product on Amazon. And it's important to be able to develop those case studies and get those names behind it. And that's a specific to Amazon. I also have case studies I pull out for clients on digital marketing, branding strategy, and everything else. So the more that you bring value and you bring it repeatedly, and the more that you become an expert at solving niche problem for niche industry, your rate should be going up accordingly.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. I think it's really, pricing is an emotional exercise, and as much as you can remove the emotion from it and turn it into an equation, the better. It's impossible to do that entirely, and at least in my opinion, but the more that you can do that, the better. It can be a little bit difficult to find a starting point. And so I don't want to get too far into turning this into a how to set your rates podcast, because we were talking about how to grow your business to a certain specific number. But one of the tips and tricks that I have used is to evaluate what standard of living you need and how much money you need to make for that standard of living. And you can divide, you can work backwards to figure out where you, what your baseline is, right? That's a good place to start internally. If what you, the way you think about your business is lifestyle related, which for me, that's kind of how I think about it, is what can I do with my business to allow me to live the lifestyle that I want to live, right? That's one of the personal internal anchors that I use. That doesn't mean that you're going to be charging enough. It doesn't mean that your rates are going to be commensurate with the work that you're doing, but it gives you a starting place. And then you can anchor that against market research. What are other people charging? What's the going rates? And you can find a pretty good starting place. And that allows you at the same time, like you said, rewarding people for taking a risk. I think that's really important too early on, is saying, you know what, these people are charging $6,000 a month on retainer for this service. I'm brand new. Let's do $2,000 a month or $3,000 a month, and let's build up some expertise and a bit of a portfolio with that. So,
and I think all that's super valuable. The reverse engineering, the asking around and doing the market research. One of the things I ask a lot of people who are service providers is, hey, how much do you charge for that as a fee? Because it helps me kind of benchmark my pricing. One of the other things, and this kind of can be uncomfortable, but I think it's a very good tool to use, is talking about pricing with clients early. And I always try to ask the question of, you know, what does success look like? What is the timeline? But also, what's your budget for this? Like, what do you have envisioned that you'll be spending to be able to unlock this value? And I ask that early and often for two reasons. Because if I find somebody who's price sensitive and looking for the cheapest service provider possible, I don't want to work with them, because I'm based on not cost, but I'm based on value. And that's something that's helps me weed out very early whether or not a client is worth talking with further. Or if I say, hey, you know, my prices are going to be too high, I can ask around my network and refer you to some people. The other thing too is that helps you get an inside picture of the founder, or the client in this case, and where they see the price of unlocking that value. And that can also help you, you know, do a gut check on the rate that you probably have in mind for that project. So that's another thing that I ask. I used to be hesitant about asking the first meeting, but I typically ask the first meeting just to be able to do a pulse check, because what I might be having in my mind in regards to scope, timeline, budget might be very different or misaligned with the founder. So the sooner I could figure out how aligned we are, and if we're not, can there be alignment, the better.
I think the takeaway from that part of the conversation is pricing is difficult and it is all educated guesswork. But in terms of growing your business, you need to be raising your rates to a certain extent. And to do that, you've got to start somewhere. So finding that baseline or that benchmark, like you described, I think is a critical step. And, you know, one of the things I want to transition to here, just to sort of put a cap on things, is I want to hear, let me back up just a second. There's a lot of content out there about how to grow your business, about people that are making six figures or like 30xing their revenue or whatnot. I don't want this episode to be that. 10K to me is purely it's a symbol, right? It's a symbolic achievement. It doesn't mean that you stop growing. It says that you've been able to generate a substantial amount of revenue for either yourself or your business, depending on how many people you have working with you. But I don't want to give people the impression that this is an easy task, that this is something that, you know, require, you know, do step one, step two, step three, and you're there. So I've shared some of the horror stories of my past. I wanted to hear, you know, kind of your take on, you know, when you've made mistakes and what you've learned from those mistakes in the process of building and growing a business.
Understanding that for every client you say yes to, there's going to be clients or opportunities that you say no to. So if you're saying yes to a bad client and a good client comes along, you are inherently making it more likely that you have to say no to that good client. So keeping that in mind, I think a big thing too is communication and managing expectations. So I've had my fair share, and I have a lot less of these problems now, where there's issues or pain points that come up because of either a lack of communication or a lack of expectations. And I had one client that I just onboarded recently, and they're like, we want to be up and ready to sell within the next 2 weeks. And I was like, that's not going to happen. It's going to be closer to 4, maybe 6 weeks because of everything going on, COVID and all that. So it's one of those things that you don't want to be a people pleaser. You want to be realistic and you want to be authentic. And the business operator, the founder, whoever you work with will appreciate you for that, because otherwise you're going to be promising something that you know from the onset that you can't deliver upon. The other thing is communication. So imagine that the client is asking at least every week, why the F am I paying this person? Where the F is the value coming from? And all that other stuff. And if you're not communicating that actively about what is being done, where there's being value unlocked, the client's going to assume the worst. And they're going to, you know, when it comes to cutting expenses, they're going to look to cut you quickly. If you're not actively communicating progress, traction, results, value. And it's one of those things that I have that built into how I communicate with clients. I touch base with clients at least once a week, typically with a more formal update saying, this is what was done, this is what's next. So they have a good look about, you know, what has been completed, what the next steps are, and where we're bringing value to them. For some clients, it'll be like a more formal monthly write-up, especially if I'm doing something more focused on revenue generation. And that could be, this is where your revenue was last month, and we've actually increased it by this percentage by doing these experiments. And this is what we have for plan for the next month, for the following month.
Absolutely. One of the things that I've always admired about you, Max, is that you measure often. You test and you measure often, which is something that I don't do nearly as much as I should. But I think it's really valuable when you're able, if you are able to point to an activity or an action and say, this resulted in this. That's really important. So yeah, I mean, we've all, you know, to kind of round it out, we've all made these mistakes. We've all had to grow through these things, but growing your business to this sort of symbolic benchmark of 10K a month, especially if you're solo or you have a small team, it requires a lot of work. But I think maybe the takeaway here is that you have to be intentional. You have to have something of a strategy to it. And the earlier that you are thinking about that and taking these steps, the faster that's going to happen for you. Because a lot of people want to know, like, when is this going to happen? When am I going to grow to this? Or how fast can I do that? And honestly, that's entirely up to you and some other market forces that are going to be entirely out of your control. But, you know, to sort of bring it all back around here, you know, so we're talking about getting really good at what you do. That involves niching. That involves paying attention to the work that you're doing with clients, learning where you're providing a lot of value, deciding what business development techniques work for you and your business and investing in that on a regular basis, and then paying attention to your rates and how you can get those rates up. There will be a ceiling at a certain point. You know, I can't charge $10,000 a month to one client. Maybe I could, not at this point. But you probably have not reached your ceiling. Most people that I know that are doing this have not reached their ceiling. So focusing on drilling down on where can I provide that value and how can I move my rates up because I'm able to deliver that value. So with that being said, what else you got? Anything we haven't covered that you want to touch on?
Yeah, I think... I took a couple notes about knowing what not to do, don't do these things. And I'm just looking over just to make sure we hit everything on this, because these are some, again, common mistakes that people might run into. Don't go for a direct sale out of the gate. A lot of people, including myself, find that as an extreme turnoff. Like if I can't have a discussion, if I can't form a relation or a connection with you, I'm not going to want to do business with you. And I absolutely hate people who, you know, do the LinkedIn connection, do the email, ask for the phone call, and they just go completely into sales mode. It's a turnoff. It doesn't work. So if you do that, stop. The other thing too is going back to this whole idea of not wanting to overpromise and trying to ground expectations in reality. Don't be afraid to say if someone asks you a question you don't know the answer. That's great. I need to research that and get back to you because I never want to make a comment where I am overpromising something I don't know or I'm not sure I can deliver. And I always want to ground everything in reality so I know that I can always hit those expectations and exceed those expectations. So being able to get asked a question that you don't know, instead of bullshitting somebody, just say, hey, I'm going to do some research. That's a nuanced question. That's a tough question. And I'll do some research, get back to you. A lot of people find that as actually something really good, and they are typically more curious with working with that person. The last thing, and this kind of goes into that whole cold email trope, don't cold, like the whole point of cold email is you don't want to do it long-term because you can't. Also, there's been a huge abundance, at least the past couple of months, people digging up contact information because you could find anyone's cell phone or email online. If you do that, stop, because there's been, it doesn't work again. And it's one of those things where, at least for myself, I block and I report those people. And it's one of those things that the more you do that as a business, the more it tarnishes your brand and the more that it'll make your brand look cheap, commoditized, and not ethical. So that's something that, again, goes back to cold email, cold outreach is okay when you're starting out, but you want to move away from that as much as possible. And there's different ways of handling it. Obviously, the brute force, I'm going to send 10,000 emails, will never work. I've never met somebody who said, you know, I'm so happy I bought this email list. I spammed them because we've gotten so much business from this, right? It's one of those things that it's a balance of quantity and quality, but when you're in the service business, which is really the relationship business and the connection business, you want to be very, very so focused on quality, the quality of the clients, the quality of the communication, the quality of the outcomes. If you invest in that, you will be very happy. Your clients will be very happy and you'll be well off.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't put it better myself. I don't have anything to add to that. So Max, I really appreciate your time. This has been great as always. Love catching up with you. Love hearing how things are going. Where can people find you?
Definitely. People can find me on LinkedIn. You just type in Max Pollock and search that. And then also abstractcollective.io. And if you want to email me, maxwpollock@gmail.com. So those are the three places I hang out the most in regards to business-oriented stuff.
Awesome. Awesome. Again, thank you so, so much for your time. I know our listeners really appreciate it.
Awesome. And thank you for having me on again.
That's it for today's dispatch. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. And if you enjoy the show, I hope you'll consider hopping over to the Apple Podcast Store and leaving us a review. It really does help us get in front of more people. Regardless, thanks so much for your support, and we'll talk to you soon.